I was a journalist for about 30 years in Michigan, mostly at Traverse City Record Eagle. I worked there for 20 years. I worked in Sault Ste. Marie. I've freelanced for, well, in the last 10 years, I've been solely freelancing. And I've been published in the Detroit Free Press, the New York Daily News. I've had a feature story on NPR, and I've done several things for Interlochen Public Radio as well as online. I've been trying to be multimedia as the market and the industry changes.
When we talk about Blood on the Mitten, infamous Michigan murders, 1700s to present, what got you interested in murder?
Well, I had covered some police and courts when I was a reporter. I've always liked reading true crime as well as history. And I want to emphasize the history in this book as well as the crime aspect of it, because I try to put the two together to try to get the people involved in the whole picture, you know, what it was like in Michigan in those days and, you know, how things are the same or different from what they are now. But I guess I should get back to your question, which was, how did I get into it? And there's one murder in here, which is probably the one that I am the most personally connected with, is one that occurred in 1996 in Kalkaska. And it was the murder of a 68-year-old woman. She had been assaulted in her home. She had been taken into her garage, put in the trunk of her own car. It was started, door closed. Horrible thing, horrible thing. It dragged on also needlessly for about 17 years as they had the wrong guy in prison, a guy who never even from the start matched the DNA found at the scene. But the Innocence Project in 2013 had a judge demand that they put the DNA on a nationwide database. They did, and got a hit almost immediately, and now hopefully it looks like the real killer is in prison. Anyway, so I've always had a great interest in that case, which is one of the 57 murders in this book. And, well, I guess, it was just when I talked to my friends who started Mission Point Press, two women who I've worked with over the years, I've known professionally, and plus a third gentleman who came up from Kansas City where he was doing publications for Kansas City Star. So they had approached me and said, would you write something for us? And we talked about what that might be. And I was, you know, greatly honored. And it's just a great organization to work for. And they've given me a lot of freedom. But we've also had to decide, okay, what would sell? I mean, we have to think of that. And so we decided to meld my interests in true crime and in history and in Michigan. So it's kind of three of my interests coming together in one book.
And I have to say, it was a guilty pleasure to read. when I picked it up in the morning, and I read it all day, and it was a one-day read. Not that it's a short book, but it's one of those things you have a hard time putting down, and you feel kind of guilty because it's grisly, and it's all these terrible murders, and it's fascinating, too, to see the photos, and you've got maps in there and that kind of a thing to follow through on that. I had to wonder, too, in the beginning you talk about some of the statistics in Michigan. We don't do so well, especially the city of Detroit.
Yeah, well, it at one time had the moniker Murder City, which, of course, was a play on Motor City. And that was unfortunate, and I don't think it's anywhere near the top anymore. There's a possibility of in the future doing a multi-state sort of series of this, of a books like this. And so I did some research, and I've kind of, you know, like been working on a proposal for a Wisconsin book. And I noticed that, in sheer numbers, Michigan beats a state like Wisconsin quite handily.
Why is that?
I really don't know. But I was going to say, but Wisconsin beats us on sheer depravity in a lot of cases.
Oh, okay. Well, if there's a silver lining in there anywhere.
But no, as I say also in the beginning, murder is something that's been with us since the start. And I think that Michigan has had a strange trajectory since I've been thinking about the history and the murder trends under the big picture. And I don't know if this has anything to do with it, but Michigan also has a lot of cities that, you know, like the boom and bust of Detroit can be paralleled with the boom and bust of many cities around the state. You know, there's other auto cities like Flint, but then there's copper cities like Calumet. When you talk about sheer rates, you're talking about most of them are the kinds of book of murders that would never get into a book like this because they're sadly routine, which I hate to say that because it's never routine for the people involved.
Yeah.
But I think that it would only be me speculating, I guess, so I should maybe not say, but I just think that there's been a lot of race for the great resources in this state, and then a lot of people leaving other, you know, then leaving an area, and then there's been desperation. And I know that desperation kind of breeds crime, so... Yeah, it's really not a book so much about rates. It's more about narratives, and it's more about things that make a good story, individual cases. So I guess in my very merely philosophical and observing, you know, just kind of from afar, the observing these trends, maybe it's because we've had more than our share of desperation.
I wondered if you were seeing something, you know, along the lines of education or poverty or hate crimes or, you know, and I even thought about weather. You know, we have those gray winters in a great part of the state and wondered if that gets people depressed or if we have a higher rate of substance abuse or anything like that. It would be interesting to, to have that. But you're right. Your book doesn't necessarily go into that. It goes into the stories.
Yeah. And so, I mean, they're all very fascinating questions and ones that I wish I knew more about and hopefully will know more about. But for me to answer, I guess, is more or less just me.
How did you go about choosing? Because obviously we have a lot more than 57 murders.
Oh, yeah.
How did you decide this one and not that one?
There are some that I couldn't not include. I've always been fascinated by the cases in Bath, the school bombing, 1927. And the Italian Hall disaster in Calumet, 1913. Huge disasters. Like Bath is still the largest school massacre in the United States ever. And Calumet, we don't know who did it. And for sure, there's been a lot of speculation, but nobody knows why.
Give us a little background on that Calumet one.
Oh,
I lived up there for a while, and I remember just frequently walking around that arch. So give us a little background on what that was.
Well, the arch was the Italian Hall, and all that, you're correct, all that's left of it now is an arch. 1913, Christmas Eve, after, you know, several months of a bitter, very bitter strike by copper mine workers who were seeking mostly better working conditions.
So there's that element of desperation.
Absolutely, absolutely. The children were at an upstairs party, Christmas Eve, which was put on by the mining union's ladies' auxiliary. And as they were in the middle of their festivities, somebody came in and yelled fire. And it's the classic, you can't yell fire in a, you know, I don't know if that was the reason why they thought of doing that, but it was astonishing that the only official exit out of there was a narrow stairway, steep stairway, with a door that opened in. And they ran down there, and there was a crush of humanity, people on top of people, you know, some crushed underfoot, others just, you know, smothered with the sheer weight of people coming down the stairs while they were in the middle there. And an astounding 73 people died, mostly children.
It's maddening to think about that the door wasn't even locked. It's just that it opens inward and that human press against those doors.
You couldn't open it once there became a crush behind the first people, yeah. And some people did have the foresight to jump out of the second floor window, and there were ample snowbanks at that time since this was December 24th of UP winter. It was just a horrible disaster, and it kind of foretold the economic and population decline of what was then a very booming city. A city of 30,000, and now it's in the hundreds. Yeah.
So, yeah, you can still see that and read about it when you go up there, and certainly you can explore the mines. It was interesting, your collection, some of them I was familiar with, some of these murder stories, Terry Nichols and Timothy McVeigh, Jimmy Hoffa. I mean, some of these are big stories that we all know, or back in history, General McCusker, you know, some of those. But there were some that I'd never heard about, and they were equally fascinating. And the reasons that these people go in, there's one that is just for fun, these young people, mental illness, passion.
The one in Warren in the 1990s, yes. And that was just a particularly gruesome and disturbing case. And that one was one that I remember when it happened and reading about it and just being, you know, it's just why. That's all you can say is why.
Yeah, that one's in our own lifetimes.
And there are a lot of them that I hadn't known about either. I mean, I grew up not too far from where John Norman Collins was murdering women. I was probably 10, 11 years old when that was happening. And so I remember it well from the news and such. But there are others that I found out as I was researching this book, and I thought, you know, well, that's interesting enough and unusual enough, like, you know, a beheading murder in Williamsburg back in the 1890s. Just, you know, some of them are simply sensational. Some of them are a sign of the times. I've learned a little bit about trends in murder in that the 60s through the 80s were pretty much the age of the serial killer. You were always hearing about serial killers, it seems like, in those decades, but you don't so much anymore. Now you hear about random shootings.
That's true.
And at the turn of the 20th century, the trend seemed to be poisonings, and a lot of those were carried out by women. And there was a very prolific woman poisoner here in Michigan by the name of Mary McKnight.
That was one of the ones that stuck out to me, that was just fascinating.
Yes, that's quite a story. Yeah, that's one that I tell in library presentations and stuff because people just find it just astounding and, you know, unfathomable, but, you know, just fascinating.
And that's interesting, too, that you do have your share of women in here, women murderers. We don't hear about, well, statistically, there aren't as many women as men who are killers. But you've got a share of women in here. And Mary, who loves funerals, was a bizarre one.
Yes.
I mean, doing it for loneliness because you kind of get a kick out of funerals? I mean, really?
Well, that's the explanation that her sister gets. And that her sister gave, rather. And, you know, and her sister might have been lucky to have been able to say that because she killed a lot of her relatives.
She didn't stop at family members.
But that nobody knows for sure if that was her motive, but it seems as good as any. And it's kind of the one that's gone down into legend.
With her favorite black dress in the closet.
Yeah.
Always ready for use. Wow. And then you take on some that are quite recent, still very, very fresh and in some ways ongoing in terms of the justice system, like the Uber killer that we had here in Kalamazoo. You cover him as well.
Yes, that is actually the most recent one that I have in this edition of the book. It came out last year, 2016, and that's when, you know, in spring of 2016 is when that the Uber driver murders occurred here in Kalamazoo. And so that's one that I will have to follow along as justice is served and, you know, and do a follow-up, I'm sure, to find out exactly how that plays out. But I thought that illustrated things that not only, you know, it illustrates how we are in the age of the random shooting, as we, you know, sadly felt in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
But then it also illustrates, you know, pieces of the current economy, the gig economy, you know, Uber drivers, people using their own cars as taxis, and people, you know, calling you up on an app on their phone. It's all very much the 20-teens, you know. Yeah. And so that, you know, just happened to be the most recent one that I have in here.
How strangers get access to people has changed with technology.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you've got some interesting sidebars in here as well. One that I found myself contemplating was a sidebar about, is war murder? We don't necessarily think of it that way. You know, some people think of it as patriotic killing. But you discuss that a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is a gray area. I mean, it's killing is killing. I mean, most religions have something that condemns killing of other human beings. You know, war killing is, there may be a very good reason for it, but it still comes down to a person killing a person.
Yeah.
And so I think it's, we have to continue to ponder it. Anyway, I'm glad you found that interesting. I don't in any way intend to settle the debate or the discussion.
No, but it's good to think
look
about
at
that.
Yeah.
You could probably ask that question about different wars and get different answers.
Absolutely. Or different sides in different wars.
Yeah.
Or even different individuals. Yeah.
How did you go about doing the research? Did you visit many of these places? Did you were some of these homes or businesses still present? Do some still haunt you in your mind?
Sort of. I mean, well, first of all, the visiting the places, I did that when I could. I did it as much as I could. And or if I wasn't able to visit them on the time constraints of putting out this first book, I researched as well as I could. I called people there and, you know, just tried to find out what was, you know, happened in that area today and tried to contrast it with what happened in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, there are some cases where entire towns are gone. There's some places where, like you say, the Italian Hall, there's still the hall there. Bath, there's still a park and a, you know, cupola, which isn't the actually original cupola, but, you know, in the town. And then there's a little, there's a school, a modern school across the street in which they have a little museum of the Bath bombing still. But yeah, I mean, the one in Detroit, the Stonehouse Manor, the man who killed his daughter and her friends because he didn't like her lifestyle, I guess you could call it hippie lifestyle or whatever, back in 1970. And I went with my brother to, you know, find a bunch of the sites that I mentioned in Detroit, and he drove me around. And, you know, I could see I went to the address and that there it's a vacant lot. And there are other buildings like it next to it and such, but apparently nobody, I don't know, you know, I think when blood is spilled in such a violent and sensational manner in some places, there's nobody that wants to live there and maybe not even on that plot of land in some cases.
Mm.
But then there's, the Williamsburg beheading from the 1890s.
Yeah.
I found out, you know, I went looking to see if there was still a house there. It is not, but then I did a little bit more research and found out that it was there for another 100 years almost. And it just sat there, and I don't know what it was used for, if anybody ever lived in it again. But then it was used in the 1990s as a training site for the fire department. So they burned it.
Right.
They burned it on purpose to train their firemen. So it's interesting when these structures still exist, and I try to find as many of them as I can, but then it's also understandable that a lot of them simply don't. But you can still kind of go there, maybe squint, and try to figure out, and try to just envision what things were like back in the day.
Have we learned anything, or are we doomed to be murderous beings forever?
Well, I think that murder is probably with us as a species because it has been from the start. I think it's the fourth chapter of Genesis, which is both the beginning of the Christian and Jewish holy books, that it's in the very fourth chapter that they deal with murder. So it's something that was with us then. And I think that's one thing that might actually give people hope, is that, yeah, there's horrible things that happen nowadays, but there have always been horrible people. There have always been horrible things that people have done to other people. We can do what we can to try to solve that, to try to lessen that, and I think we should, but take solace in that most of us go through our lives and, you know, these are the exceptions. These are not the rule. These are unusual occurrences. There's a lot of darkness in this book, but there's also, I tried to inject some irreverence, some humor into
yeah.
it. And I think the ones that you can do that with most readily are things like mafia killers, because we can all kind of look at them and say, well, okay, those people are not in our boat, and I'm hopefully not
going to. They
chose
a certain lifestyle.
Yeah. That and the passage of time, you know, I had to deal with each one of them individually, because to know whether or not I can inject a little bit of, you know, levity into it, or a little.
And some are just different, like the Calumet one that we talked about earlier, and you envision these children, you know, deceased children laid down in the snow. That's never going to be funny. But some of them, there's irreverence is a good word, like Mary with her funerals and her.
Yeah, right. Well, it's just so bizarre. Yeah.
So it's there's different elements. So what are you working on now? You mentioned that you may have some books coming up, still follow-ups on Michigan or other states.
Yeah. Well, the other state series is on hold for the moment, but I am doing a book that will be out next year that has to do with robberies and other types of crimes. Of course, there are some murders involved in those, but it's not the main event.
Right.
Some of them are heists that have never been solved. Some of them are interesting because of the people that are in them. But, you know, again, I'm looking for interesting stories over the span of years, and also how they might indicate something about our history.
Well, thank you for coming by, Tom. It's a fascinating book and great fun to talk to you.
Well, thank you very much.